Breeders' Cup champions. And no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Last about 45 minutes or so to close out this busy Wednesday. And as mentioned, Trey Stiles. And so essentially we've gone through the entire cast just a couple of weeks into Sam Houston. And we, of course, kicked it off with Frank Hoff and Nick. And then last week, Jess joined us. And Trey is going to... give us a little bit of a window into how these first couple of weeks have unfolded. Always happy to feature the handicapping stylings. Trey Stiles, good morning.
Hey, man, good morning. Glad you are. You have the whole crew on.
And that's good, actually, because, you know, it gives everybody a feel for, you know, what's going on. I guess I got to get Martha Clausen on, too, at some point.
There you go.
Martha does such a great job with all the news and notes. And, Trey, you know, one thing that it occurs to me we've never discussed, you and Duke Matisse, you know, guys that are familiar, you know, to elite horseplay and contest play, but you also enjoy the quarters and you've got real crossover knowledge on the quarters, and that's something we have never really done much of here. And with all these southeastern and southwestern cards that have got crossbreed racing, it's a valuable tool to have somebody like you that can lead people into the quarters.
Well, yeah, when I first as a kid started going to the races over at Delta, I grew up right on the border. It was I had more time in the summers, and so that's what was running, and so I just kind of naturally, I guess my first exposure was to the quarter horses, and so I've always kind of liked them. I've kept numbers, and I think I'm comparable in results. I definitely know more about the thoroughbreds, but definitely capable of handicapping the quarter horses, and sometimes I almost think I like them better. I don't know. I mean, it's just more. I really enjoy watching the races and wagering on the quarter horses.
Give everybody the overview, the primer. I mean, what are we looking for when we look at those PPs? Because it's entertaining, and I saw a Champion of Champions at Los Al, which was incredibly exciting. But I would not know what to do first, looking at quarter PPs.
Well, I will confess that I struggle as much as anybody when I'm looking at maybe a Santa Anita card, and there's a 1,000-yard quarter horse race from Los Al in there, and I'm trying to figure out how does that equate. I struggle with that too. The break's obviously huge. So trip handicapping can come in really. I'd say I do more of that with quarter horses than I do. I do both, but it jumped out at you more in the quarter horse races where you really can see somebody lost all chance. So I like to watch replays with quarter horses, maybe probably more than I do with thoroughbreds. And I don't know why, but I like to use trainer stats, through Formulator, and I seem to come up with more doozies with really good trainers that are maybe 1 for 50 at whatever it might be, first time starters or whatever angle that I'm looking for. I don't know. So stats tend to jump out at me more with the quarters than they do with thoroughbred.
Geez, that's interesting because that is somewhat counterintuitive, although it makes sense that a price will come from, can come from, somebody doing something that, that isn't going to be obvious to the public. It's funny because yesterday I had that conversation with Andy Serling, and Andy had found that big price winner at Gulfstream that was the Chandler family, the Mom's Moon. But he came at it as a pedigree play, sibling a half of to analyze it. And the thing for me that was glaring was Rusty Arnold with his second time statistics, where he's got mid-20, 24% win tout with a $4.50 ROI. But you're kind of pointing out the opposite, which is low ROI and low win percentage, but maybe a horse that that normally breaks well but didn't. And it makes sense that a horse that gets away bad in quarters would be doomed. Pretty much. You don't see him coming flying from off the pace all that often.
Right. And when you do, you definitely want to make note of that as well, because that does happen. And where you see the other side of that, a bad break and the horse gets up to nose a win out or a close second. And I use my stable mill more with the quarter horse meet because I see things that interest me, that I want to catch next time they come back, wherever they come back. And I was listening yesterday when you guys were talking, and I thought it was funny because both you and Andy, I was thinking, man, I would, when I catch both of those angles, yeah, I'd be all over that. I would, that make me jump on that.
Rusty Arnold is, I think we coined yesterday, I think I'm going to graph that nickname, Wile E. Coyote. I think that's going to stick now. That's going to be Rusty's already a nickname, but we're going to put another one on him too. We're going to hang another moniker on George R. Arnold III, or second, is he second or third? I think he's I can't remember if he's the second or the third.
He's
a multiple. I think he's second. What about post position? It wouldn't seem that on a straightaway, not that they only run on straights, but you would think on the straightaway, post really isn't an issue, is it?
No, I would disagree. I think it's more of an issue because if you're running a thoroughbred race and the inside's live or the inside's dead, you can move around and get away from it. But in a quarter horse race, that's where you are. So if you can catch a racetrack, you know, biases either long term, sometimes, you know, track full of that, it'll be the whole meet where one way or the other is running better than the other. That's not the case with Sam Houston. But sometimes I at least think I'm seeing short term biases, and yeah, you can, and that's another one I love to see. Maybe a horse that struggled on the inside when it was dead, and then I'll put that one in my stable mail to try to catch that one coming back alive in a better spot. But you can't get, you're stuck in a quarter horse race if you're in a good or if you're in a bad lane. There's just no getting around it.
Well, and when you say that, actually, and you think, it does occur to me that invariably, and I'm just thinking about Los Al, for instance, where they come out the chute, they come out the length of the stretch, and where what effectively is a chute is going to meet the main track. I would guess that the inside is there may be less of a, is there less, probably less of a crown, right, to get over.
I think that I don't know if it's either morning works where, you know, once the inside gets chopped up more or weather can, you know, rain, it doesn't drain. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons that can affect why it's inside or outside. I don't really try to figure, I don't pretend to be a track maintenance expert. I just try to notice when I see these things happening. I see horses struggling that I think shouldn't be. And if I can start figuring out that that's the reason why, whether it's inside or outside, that can be just a huge advantage in quarter horse racing, either that day or when those horses run back.
When you look at a mixed card, because I would imagine that, you know, the rank and file thoroughbred player, I'm just thinking of myself. I mean, I won't. Like in Indiana with the you know, the last race or the last two races, some days, you know, being quarter races, I mean, I won't include them in the multi opportunity. A lot of other venues, you think about New Mexico where the early part of the card, and Texas too, will be, you know, potentially have quarters, Louisiana as well. But I imagine that's a barrier to continuity, isn't it? What in your experience and in conversation with players?
Well, I definitely, there's people that, like, most thoroughbred players aren't gonna pass those races. They're, you know, maybe they'll try to figure something out if they like multi races, but for the most part, I think thoroughbred players just pass those. I think most quarter horse players can go both ways, can do or at least think they can, and so I think. If that answers the question, I can tell you that, like, one of my first qualifications for the NHC was at Zia, and it was a mixed race card, and it was just alternate, right? There was like 5 and 5, and it'd be 1 and 1 and 1. And I think I hit all the quarter horse races and none of the thoroughbred races. And nobody else, because, you know, for the NHC players, they don't know the quarters. So that was just a huge advantage. It can be a huge advantage, but I don't know if that's as much the case now. I think people kind of pick and choose their spots.
What about paints and when they
I joke on Sharpie Time all the time when we're doing the, I don't, in a quarter horse race, I don't care what your class you're running in. I won't say never, but I don't care if you're running in 5,000 claimers or a big stakes race. I just care how fast you get from point A to point B, because it's just pace doesn't factor into the equation. I mean, it's going to be harder, obviously, if you're against better company, but your time, if you can get from point A to point B in X time, I don't care who you're running against.
Yeah, I love it. So the Arabians and the paints and the quarters and the flats. Trey, give us a couple of thoughts. We're a couple of weekends in at Sam Houston, and the interest has been high. The handle's been very good. Obviously had that weather issue last Saturday night, but kind of getting on a roll now, and we got our first couple of stakes tomorrow. I should mention, I believe that the Ladies Classic and all the stakes card for the end of the month, I believe nominations close today. So let's give the racing office an assist, and if anybody hasn't, yep. If you haven't nominated, get in today. But some thoughts about these first 2 weeks.
It's been great. We had a little lull maybe the end of last week. Some of the fields got a little smaller, and looking ahead here at some of the races this week, I'm hoping that was just a little blip and now we're purring. But yeah, it's been lots of interest. Even when we've had small fields, Mighty, there's been just some huge prices coming in. I unfortunately have not tapped into some of those short field long shots that have come in, but so the prices have been there, even in the short fields, and things have gone well. It's been a good meet, and we're just kicking off. I really, looking ahead at tomorrow's and going forward, I really think we're going to have bigger fields, and that's what people love about Sam Houston, I think, is big fields and turf racing, and I think the turf track course is coming along. I think we'll start to see more and more there, and I think we're going to see bigger fields as we go forward.
You know, a couple of notes about some, you know, some of the horsemen and some of the riders from a statistics standpoint, and as we discussed with Frank and with Nick to start the season, Asmussen and Broberg, etc., you know, J.R. Caldwell, all off. You know, all off to very good starts, but there's a couple of things that I thought were noteworthy, and that includes Austin Gustafson, who just seems to send horses out ready, Trey, on a regular basis.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, no, he's been killing it. I think he's got 3 wins, but just not near as many starts as everybody else. But yeah, his horses are ready. They're almost all firing. That's an angle I've started, I've been looking for him, and horses kind of jumping up, coming out here, making their first starts at Sam Houston.
There's a notable, I think there's only one trainer with more than one start that's perfect, and that's Greg Green, who has sent out a couple of short-priced horses, granted, 5-2 types, but he's obviously... You know, well meant. He's 2-2. I thought the presence right from the first week that Frank Lucarelli has, I know of Lucarelli from the Pacific Northwest, but it's obvious that that he's come ready to to fire.
Yeah, there's been a lot. You haven't been able to just focus on Broberg and Asmussen like you have some years. I mean, those two probably in the end, they're going to have the most starts. They're going to be up there. But there's some other trainers doing really well. I talked about a lot of people asked me who I thought would be a big trainer surprise. And I thought after looking through the card the first week and just following, I thought Ronnie Cravens would have a good meet. And he's doing well, too. I think he's third. I don't know. He's up that leaderboard as well with he's got a lot of entries as well, so that's another one to watch. He's getting some good ones in there.
Yesterday, if you stayed with us through the end of the show yesterday, did you hear Danny Caldwell?
I did. I got to admit, Steve, I listened to you while I'm exercising. So while everybody else is needs rock music or whatever to get their blood pumping, I'm listening to you, which I don't know what that says. I did get that, and that was good. I enjoyed that interview a lot. I learned a lot about him. I thought it was a great interview.
Well, the opportunity to talk about Federico Villafranco's son, Martin Villafranco, and he's 1-13, but he's got 5 seconds. That qualifies actually as a very nice start. And the horses that have won, his average... I think the average mutual has been pretty juicy. Yeah, the one horse that won was 25-40, but the fact that he's essentially 50% above 50% in the money, a win of 5 seconds and a third, And there's a few people that are sending out horses at big prices that have hit the board. Sarah Davidson has got 5 board hits and a win from 12 starters.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know the whole scoop with Caldwell, kind of how that, and the trainers that he had. I found that very informative to me and interesting. So, yes, we've got a lot of different folks moving around. A lot of good stuff happening.
Well, it's on the training front, we'll keep tracking. On the riding front, how about Rye Eichelberry? 10 wins the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's been getting some, obviously he gets his mounts for Broberg, but he's been getting some good ones elsewhere as well. The Adoro teams up some and just seems to find good spots. Some trainers are picking him up even when he doesn't have a Broberg entry, and sometimes he shows up on other horses when there is a Broberg entry. So, he's getting some good rides.
You know, I got to ask you about there's one in here that and I've got to look up because I'm not even sure which Melanson this is. This is Jansen Melanson.
Yeah, that's Gerard's son, I believe. I'm 98% sure that's right. So,
how about that?
I think Martha Clausen had an article about that. One of her pieces went out about the father son, some of the father son angles with Lovey and those two right here at Sam Houston. That's, I want to say in this first race, maybe it's about this first race tomorrow.
How about that? And he's 4-for-10 to start the season.
Yeah.
Jansen.
Yeah. That's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Plays the shows, but they're all, he's getting the job done.
Well, and you mentioned little what we in New York who watched him grow up, little Luz, Lane Luzzy, 7 wins and 32 starters, and Lane's got a big future. Somebody,
yeah, he's very good. There's no, that's been a, yeah, he's, but for a while, that's not a big surprise this year. We've seen that for a bit now, and yeah, he's getting some right mounts. I mean, he's right there in the jockey standing.
Well, we just, somebody's got to filter him on Twitter. That he's sharp on the oval. He's in a jackpot a little frequently on Twitter. Let's look ahead actually to tomorrow. Trey Stiles is with us, and before I let you go, after we talk about tomorrow's card, I do want to get out in front. You're going to sit with me too for when we get to Vegas. You're one of, you and Roger Satina are among the historic, you know, first visits early morning at Vegas.
I like to get out there early because that's the one people ask me for, like, you know, advice, tips in Vegas. I tell people to get out as early, especially if you're not on the West Coast time. Get out there as early as your work and family you know, limitations allow. And then, my kids are off to college, and my wife just seemed to see me out of the house, so that works out well. I'm gonna head out a little early and try to enjoy myself, relax a little, and do a little homework when I'm in Vegas.
I love it. I'll be out Tuesday. I can't, but my God, today's Wednesday, so it's less than a week. We'll be there. We'll do the first show a week from today from the ballroom at Bally's. Unbelievable. And we'll talk to Trey about contest play and his season this year. And you should be, by the way, if you're not following Trey Stiles, it's ride_that_pony. Ride that pony with underscores, and let's underscore the card. Mark it up for tomorrow. What do we like?
Well, I think those stakes races are going to be interesting to start the day off. They're just small fields, so I don't, you know, I think they'll be fun. I'm glad that they're both have fields of 5, the Stallion Series that they have. So, but I kind of think those look a little chalky to me. So, I always try to go through the card and find my favorite play of the day because that's one of the things people like to see. And I struggled with a couple here, and I think I'm going to go with a low odds horse in the that you were actually talking. You were talking with Danny Caldwell about the 7th race because he's got one in there, Girl You Find, that I definitely think is in the mix. But I'm going to go with Bernie in that race, a horse that ran at Delta last time. didn't really like it. Went a mile. A mile at Delta can be kind of a weird thing for horses that aren't used to it. Not going to hold that one against you. But we were just talking about Deodoro and Eichelberry. I was saying he gets rides for other trainers, and those two are teaming up here, and they really do well together. I just think it all comes together. Horse is working well, really fires almost every out. This is not a stakes race. It's a optional claimer, but man, there's some good. I think what Caldwell said yesterday, this is a stakes level field. I think it's a fun race to watch. So I decided to make this. I think this will be my favorite play of the day, and I'm going to go with the Bernie at 3-1, which is probably the lowest I've done that. I've tried to find some long shots, but I really like Bernie's shots in this race. But man, there's some good horses in here.
Well, and Bernie, the Deodoro, this is now a 5-year-old mare that has always been, you know, a stake level type, and I never hold anybody a bad effort at Delta. If it's a one-off start at Delta, you put a line through it. The Sabine Sand, that is not a racetrack for every horse. And it is not unusual for somebody, if they love it, they love it. If they don't, they won't lift a hoof.
Yeah, between the surface and the, you know, the three-quarters oval, it's
yep.
Tight turn. Some horses don't dig it. So, yeah, I'm with you. I won't hold one shot. And this horse just fired. Before that, was just firing on all cylinders. So, having good work, is, you know, right here at Sam Houston, really nice works. I think Bernie. I rarely pick a. It's not the favorite, but 3-1 odds on the morning line. I think that's probably about right, and I still think there's some value there to make that my favorite play of the day.
Interesting. I'm also going to mention Factual from the rail with Carlos Montalvo, who's not off to a good start. But this one comes in from Remington for Broberg, and it actually is in for the price. And Factual's 4-1, partially part of an entry with I'm a Discreet Lady. What's the rule in Texas if a jock is double named?
Well, we've been seeing you can. I mean, we've been seeing them usually. Broberg usually scratches at least one of them, and sometimes twice. Sometimes he's been scratching both of them. So I'd expect one or both of those to disappear. But I didn't know what to do with Factual. I really struggled, and that is one of the ones that that I left out that scares me. But this is a really solid race, man. There's some good horses in here.
Very much, and Villafranco and Danny absolutely with Girl You Fine have every
yeah.
shot, and you get 5-1 there.
Yeah, totally agree. I couldn't leave that one out of my range. I mean, if you made me pick another horse, I probably would go with Quick. The Caldwell Stuart Elliott shows up there, and another one working really well with a bad last race, and not all that bad, but it should be a fun one.
You know, what is your read, Trey, over the years? Because this happens to be a group where, you, especially looking outside, you mentioned Quick, and that makes me wonder aloud. There's also Zerelda, who's a big price for David Gomez with Little Luz. But what's the general approach on turf to dirt movers at Sam Houston, you know, because composition, I try to explain this all the time, you know, there's places, there's dirt tracks that have got particularly high clay content, and turf horses will get over that kind of a course better. How do turf horses fare when they try the dirt at Sam Houston?
Yeah, I don't know that I think that Sam Houston is any different than any other, track. I mean, I'd like to see a horse that's demonstrated ability over the surface. I think Sam Houston's turf, it always gets rave reviews. And, I mean, I think that, you know, if you dig turf running, you're going to like the course there. I don't know that I have any particular, you know, like a Sam Houston dirt to turf is good or bad. I think you have the same concerns that you have anywhere. With that move, but I like Zerelda too. I got that one as my third pick in the race. It's just that I'm so keen on Bernie that I'm not going to play. Normally, I'd be jumping on that long shot there, coming turf to dirt with some solid work there at Delta two, a couple back. But I'm just so keen on Bernie that I'm going to probably pass on that long. We're going to use it underneath, but But that's not why. I think it plays pretty fair.
I like it. All right. And any thing in the late races?
Yeah, I had I think another one that I had in the mix that I was kind of considering was the in the ninth race. I kind of like the one horse G Victory. This one's kind of, I talk about this on Sharpie Time all the time. I love to see lightly raced horses that just keep getting better, whether it's finish positions or buyer figures or lengths beaten or whatever it is that you like. I personally like to see the rising buyer speed figures. And so this one's got that 10-1 morning line. I think it's going to get a little, I think you'll get that. I think it's going to be a price. Maybe not all of 10-1, but I think you're going to get money there. So I thought maybe take a shot with a price in a race that I think lots can win here. I mean, I don't think there's a lot that, you know, it doesn't stand out over everybody else, but there's several horses that can win, and I think you'll get a good price on G Victory, who has a legit chance.
You know, there's a couple in here beside, you know, G Victory's 10-1. Caldwell, interesting first-time four-year-old that Brett Calhoun actually had, and I'm going to guess for Mike Abraham at the time, because it's an Abraham homebred, Lil Carpe, and now comes back for a four-year-old debut. Won it first asking at Lone Star in the mud, and obviously something went awry. Has been working since November, and Caldwell's got Lil Carpe in here at 8-1, and I thought that Mindy Willis had an interesting look too. I'm the Machine, the Arky bred in here, coming off of a third place finish at Remington. So there's plenty of price options in this group.
I totally agree. I'm with you on Lil Carpe. I have that one. I haven't formalized or submitted these, but I have a third selection on this one. In this race, I just got a little scared by the layoff. One start for a 4-year old, and then a big layoff makes you nervous. Makes me nervous.
Nice numbers for JR though. Yeah. You know, first time trainer, 24% with a big ROI, and he's good 180 days plus. Just looking at at the standard trainer line, very nice numbers. And he and Luz is a go to for JR.
Yeah, those will probably both be horses. My top pick in that one that I'll be using in my multi-race wagers, because I think they're both going to be decent prices. And like, you made a good argument as well. I'm with you. I have Lil Carpe in there with a shot as well, and should be paying pretty good.
There's not a lot of pace in here. Otherwise, I'd be very eager to play with I'm the Machine. And I got a feeling that the Arky bred is gonna go northward from that 12-1. In fact, the fact that Alfredo Triana is struggling a little bit. He's 1-17 to get the meat going. But I'm the Machine's a horse that I'll kind of put a watch list on.
Yeah, that was one of my concerns there. And, you know, G Victory, my selection here is one of only two that really has demonstrated any desire to go up to the lead. And so that was another reason I liked that one. And we didn't talk about this. We were talking about kind of angles earlier. I mean, it's dirt racing and it's a 6-furlong race. You can't get too far behind, but I just have been very hesitant to play deep closers in any of the dirt racing that so far this meet. We had a really kind of weird windy day that we did see some horses come from off the pace with a huge wind behind their back down the stretch. But I the closers make me nervous, especially at 6, especially in a race where there's not a lot of speed.
Well, good policy in general, and specifically here, Trey Stiles. I appreciate this as we get the rotation rolling with everybody that so thoughtful at SHRP. The horse players are first and foremost. Whether it's the aggressive pricing on the wagering menu or the quality of opinions with you and Jessica and Nick helping everybody. So Sharpie Time coming up tomorrow, of course, and then all the Sharpies will be assembled at Bally's next week, and we'll do some in-person conversation when I see you next.
I love it. I love talking about the NHC. I always have a blast out there and enjoy visiting with you.
Trey Styles. Ride that pony, everybody. Ride underscore that underscore pony. One of the most respected, not just contest players, one of the most respected horse players on the scene, and he shares his expertise, and he and Nick, an amazing pairing at Sam Houston as of the last couple of weeks. Let's close out the morning with Seth Merrow, and it's always a pleasure to welcome.
Good morning.
There he is, bright and bold.
Yeah, well, aren't I always bright and bold?
I don't know. Sometimes you're once in a while you'll be a little subdued.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Well,
you're probably right.
We've got. I'm sure you've got Gulfstream in Tampa to talk about. And I want to thank. Nick Cirillo sent me a reminder. He said, "Remind everybody that Michael Wright, his most recent opportunity to keep the streak going, he's got Victor's Destiny, who yesterday sounded like he liked at Tampa in the eighth. We'll see who Seth likes at Tampa and or Gulfstream. But Seth, what's your take on the Wilson Chute and a new place for you to hold court, a new bar at Saratoga?
That all of the New York news was interesting. The tunnel at Belmont, which had been mentioned before, that was just kind of a dates and whatnot, but the announcement of the Chute, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. And I didn't hear Glenn yesterday. I'll have to pull that up. I'm assuming that, the little parking area, the little picnic area they put on the clubhouse turn, they're going to lose that now with the Chute,
no.
I'm assuming.
No.
Okay.
It's going to come into that, but they're going to reconfigure the tailgating area.
Okay, because I thought that was, for folks who don't know, we do, you and I on Sundays, and Capital TV does TV from the backstretch every day, so virtually every day I drove by that parking area, and it seemed like it was doing okay. It was brand new last year. I thought it was a fun idea, and it seemed like it was doing okay when I drove by every year, so I'm glad they're going to figure out a way to keep that going. But, yeah, I mean, the reasoning that they put out there, when the turf races changed, the options for distances on the main track just weren't optimal, and so it completely makes sense, because as people who are there all the time and see the season play out, that was kind of obvious to us. So it's going to be fun to see, and it's going to be fun to see how it plays. It's not a two-turn race. It's a turn and a half, kind of. So it's going to be fun to see how it handicaps and how it plays. But I think it's going to be a fun addition to Saratoga, no question about it.
Agreed. It is amazing that that on an annual basis there's new wrinkles, there's innovation and attempts to maximize. And I know some people get put out by this, but this is the the biggest, most lucrative portion of the racing calendar in New York, and. It's amazing, Seth, that over the years, where there was the refrain about, oh, Naira, they can't make money. They're so inept. And then when they go to maximize their biggest asset, that's no good either. So which is it, folks? Are they inept and can't make money, or is it okay that they are maximizing the most lucrative portion of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I've applauded the current management. Dave O'Rourke and company have just done a great job over the past few years, because it is a historic facility, and they've kept that in mind. And the new, clubhouse that I always forget the date, the 1880
63.
The new building.
That's the date.
I always get the wrong date. It keeps in line with the historic architecture of the whole place. And I have said right along, taking those grandstand areas that were up at the top of the stretch that on the vast majority of days would be completely empty, and upgrading that to an upscale area that now gets a lot of attention. It's a fun place to watch the races. And then down on the apron where they put the new cabana kind of a situation as well. Those are just great uses of the facility that keep in mind how to make it a great day for horse racing fans. And so, yeah, I tip my cap to virtually everything they've done over the past few years. It's really been fun to watch. And as they say, they have kept in mind, you know, the historic nature of the facility as well.
My favorite comment when that end of the grandstand was utilized and turned into this, I mean, really clever area. My favorite was the comment about, that's where I go when I want to have some alone time at the track.
That is good.
That was the great, and actually I love the source of that comment is actually somebody that I adore, and who is invaluable for their contribution around the game, but it was the craziest reaction I'd ever seen. And it's like, well, wait a minute.
No, I understand the sentiment. I mean, I could kind of buy into that too. But then you have to realize, okay, is what's worth more, my alone time or three sections that are filled with people? So you have to put it on the scale and kind of weigh it out.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, and you never really would have thought about, you know, that it, you know, other than the letter, section TUVX. Until you watched the racing from the opposite side, from the backstretch, you never really realized. In fact, you know, you always think of the place as busy, and you know, when there's an average of, you know, 15,000 to 18,000 on a weekday, that doesn't mean that back half of the grandstand was ever full. It was only ever even. The only day it was full was on Travers, and even on busy Saturdays there would be, like, you know, there'd be the people would be like, you know, a postage stamp on a manila envelope. You know, there'd be a few, you know, there'd be some people that were, you know, sitting there, but listen, Churchill did the exact same thing with Baby Grand and with a corner of that, you know, the turn for home at the top of the stretch. They turned their top of the stretch into some of the nicest places to spend Oaks and Derby, with a picnic grill area. And, well, you know, there's people, Seth, that don't appreciate even at Belmont that you've got the picnic grove on the front side where that you can book for a party that are fabulous. And people don't even know about it, probably, because it's, you know, it's so far up the stretch.
Yeah, and then it's Saratoga, too. It's not just that, those fan kind of things. It's what they're doing with the chute. But last year, the renovation over on the Oklahoma track. So, I mean, there's been a lot of work, not just on the fan side of things, but on the horseman and horse side of things as well. As I say, I just applaud everything they've done over the past, you know, 5 years or so. It has upgraded the facility. And as I say, kept in mind the historic nature, because that's kind of the fun of it, too. You know, you walk around, and I always say, people like you and me who are there so often, kind of some of the historic value of the place gets lost on us because we're there so often. But I would tell people, you know, who haven't been there, or maybe who have been there and haven't noticed, you know, next time when you go, look at some of the ironwork on the stairways and the artistic ironwork on the stairways that, you know, have been there for years and years and years. And it's really an amazing facility. But again, they've held on to that historical nature as well.
Somebody actually took a picture of a section of some of the ironwork and said they were urging, they urged Naira. They said, you know, please make sure to give some attention. I guess there was a spot where they were pointing out that the ironwork needed some restoration or, you know, some girding to some degree. The, you know, for those that, the, some of that ironwork, you know, was brought up from Belmont when Belmont was renovated.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the some of those frescoes that are on the either side.
Yeah, the outside back stairs that kind of
yes.
lead to the bandstand.
That came from Belmont.
There's a whole series there. Yeah,
that came from Belmont.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I'm a treasure trove of useless information. Why don't you be a treasure trove of action at Tampa or Gulfstream? What do we like today?
I'll jump over into that pick four at Tampa. Last week's pick four, I gave up that sequence. Boom, boom, boom. Got through the first three.
I know.
And there were two or three horses that I said, I don't know whether the odds would hold up. And they did, and we had a little bit of value. And then I think I had the best horse in the last leg and just got off to a horrible start and wound up getting up for second. That was frustrating. But we'll see. We'll toss out some ideas today.
Real quick.
Tampa. Tampa, what do we have? Tampa sixth race. I have a 2-5-1. I'll put Clay's Moonstone, just kind of logical there. Gramercy is also kind of logical. But Tap Dance Fever goes out for Gerald Bennett. And just a Gerald Bennett horse that maybe I can get 5-1 with. Has some positional early speed from the rail. I'm leaving out Feeling Mischief. That one may bite me in the behind. But I'm going to go 2-5-1 in the sixth. In the seventh race, I'll use 4-7-3-1-6. I'll put Montauk Summer on top for Mike Deeney. Claimed the horse a couple back for Mike Deeney and owner Mike Deeney. Trainer and owner Mike Deeney, but now moves down to Tampa and into his barn, and that one could be interesting. Second slot, I'll go with Call Brothers or Call Bros. Comes over from Gulfstream and the Synthetic. Had been some turf races over there too, but I like the venue move for that one. Spiritual King, speed from the rail, I think will be dangerous. And then the North Remembers with Sammy Camacho on board. And, you know, this is one of those tracks that there are two or three jockeys you always have to pay attention to, and Sammy Camacho is at the top of the list. So seventh race, 7-3-1-6, go three deep in the eighth, 9-4-2. We will put Rumpole on top, comes out of a nice win at Prairie Meadows back in September, claimed out of that. Class-wise, I'm not sure how the horse is going to stack up. And also at the layup, I'm a little concerned. But the horse comes back ready to run. Has to be in the mix. Rocky's Buckaroo at 5-1, a lot of early speed. Third start back off a layup. Villa Gomez on board. I think that horse is dangerous. And this is one of those horses like last week. Last week I said a couple of times, I don't know if the odds will hold up, but they did. Striking Air at 15-1. It's Gerald Bennett and Sammy Camacho. The buyers may allow the number to hold up. So I'll put that one in the mix as well and hope we get some value and maybe get that one through. So the eighth race, 9-4-2, and then I'm three deep in the ninth as well, 1-6-7. Great Junior. I just thought of the last race, the last couple, it seems to be moving in the right direction, could be primed for a good effort. Wonder Water, claim two back, and now drops down to probably more of a comfort zone. Blinkers come off, Lasix on, and then at 8-1, Sammy Camacho is on the dungeon. And I think this horse, I think the horse belongs. And again, the 8-1 looks generous to me, but we were getting the right odds last week. We'll hope that one holds up. In the
nice.
Ninth, I have it 1-6-7.
So a $36 play, 2-5 with the 7-3-1-6, 9-4-2-1-6-7. So let me do it in order. The 2-5 with the 1-3-6-7, with the 2-4-9, with the 1-6-7. Seth Merrow, everybody, capital OTB, the face of GoTB. Thank you.
Good luck to everybody. Talk to you next week. Talk to you from Vegas next week. I'm envious.
I forgot that you're not coming, and that's too bad, actually. Seth Merrow, everybody, and you can watch me from Vegas, I guess, with Seth next Sunday, and if you need me at any other time, too. Whatever you need.
Okay.
Sending you out to the race day, Seth Merrow, Trey Styles, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and Jared Burdine will join us tomorrow, Dickie Powell as well for HKJC, and KK, Horse Racing KK, Kevin Kirstein with your Derby Future Wager. Good luck today, everybody. Gus has got Tampa and Gulfstream action as well. I'll put it at the website now, and we will talk to you in the morning, Thursday edition at the races here on Sirius XM. Good luck.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.